Alexa, what is my opinion worth?
I don't know that one.
Alexa, what does it matter what I think?
Sorry, I don't know that.
Alexa, a penny for your thoughts.
I don't know that one.
Alexa, what should I care about?
Sorry, I don't know that one.
Alexa, what do you know?
Ask me anything factual and I'll answer if I can. Every day I'm learning and getting better.
You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. I am Charlie Bennett in the studio with Wendy Hagenmeyer and Fred Rasko.
And Alexa.
And Alexa. Don't use the wake word, man. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
Our show today is called For What It's Worth. We could have also called it What's on Our Mind, but that is not the title of a Buffalo Springfield song.
Mm-hmm. Any excuse to play the Springfield works for me. We've been on break for a couple weeks, so we're dipping our toe back into it. We're going to talk a little bit about what's on our mind, what's bothering us, and what we think might change for the better or the bitter.
Speaking of the better and the bitter, I just want to say the bitter is that we're going to dedicate this show to Aretha Franklin, the memory of her. And the better is, some of you know the song we're going to play that's called For What It's Worth, and some of you are going to be so surprised that that's what this song is called. I'm looking forward to that. If you, our listeners, want to join the conversation of the show, the hashtag for the show is LITS393 for Lost in the Stacks, episode 393. 393, how did we get so far? Feel free to tweet your thoughts, questions, casual concerns, or the moment you recognized the song For What It's Worth, with that hashtag.
Our songs today are about getting into and out of something, listening, collecting, and the things on our mind. Today's show is going to be just a sampling of the things about the world of information that intrigue us, and we're going to skim the surface for whatever that's worth. And we promised Buffalo Springfield, so here it is, For What It's Worth, to kick off our show right here on Lost in the Stacks. For What It's Worth by Buffalo Springfield. Okay, and for what it's worth, we're going to talk about a few different topics today. I think one per segment.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so the origin of this show was, hey, let's just talk about what's on our mind. And it very quickly became, let's talk about these three things.
So the first thing, the first topic.
The first thing.
For what it's worth.
Aw.
The Facebook Digital Literacy Library.
Now, I have no credibility, you know, as a subversive or an anti-consumerist, because as we all just discovered in the studio, I have an Alexa that I talk to. But I don't like this at all, Fred. This doesn't seem good at all. Anything with Facebook and digital literacy, it just seems like...
And library. They call it the library.
Yeah, that's a lie too, right? I think they're stacking the deck. So that's just what I want to start with. I just want to push that end of the envelope.
Okay, so, well, let's talk about what it is. Okay, the Facebook Digital Literacy Library, and this was first brought to the three of us in the studio today to our attention by Amit Doshi, a co-host who's absent today.
And Facebook probably made him disappear after he brought it to our...
They hired him.
Facebook Digital Literacy Library is a series of courses for teaching students ages about 10 to 18 how to evaluate social online information, thoughtful reflection about what they post online, their social media presence, really, their online presence. Yeah.
Their brand identity.
Right. Yeah. Which, if they have one online, it really behooves Facebook for them to have an online identity, because naturally Facebook is a place for them to have that.
Yeah. Most recently, I was told that your personal brand is the most embarrassing way you've ever injured yourself.
Most embarrassing way you've ever injured yourself?
Yeah. If you can dredge up that memory, you can kind of discover your personal brand.
So the personal brand is like the lowest common denominator of embarrassing memories that you have. That's it.
You may have given it more thought now than even the person who wrote it.
So this digital literacy library for students, it's created, it does have a sort of a library and connection. It's created by the youth and media at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. And there's a lot of librarians that work with the Berkman Center.
Berkman is in on this.
This is a Berkman created initiative.
I am confused and intrigued.
So there's a bunch of courses. I think there's about 18 courses right now that you can go to Facebook, you know, search their digital literacy library, and there's about 18 courses that, you know, parents or educators or anyone interested in teaching kids can use to tell them how to reflect positively, I guess, on what they do online.
And these are like modules. These are almost sort of programs in a box. You could do one, you could do all, you could do some.
Right.
And get something out of it. It's not cumulative.
It's right. Like a MOOC.
Yes, a massive open online course.
I had almost forgotten how fun it was when you mention massive online courses, massive open online courses.
Okay, so I guess I'm going to give just an example of like what one of these courses is about. This is online. So an example course, Different Perspectives is the name of this course. And the description reads, participants will examine the role of perspective when evaluating information linked to their online presence or the online presence of others. They will gain awareness of the relevant contextual factors, time, cultural, social, etc., that impact one's online presence. And additionally, participants will consider the implications of the information they put online on their relationships with family, friends, authority figures, for example, teachers, employers.
Now, Fred, right mm-hmm. now you are running for the library, or are co-running, mm-hmm. the information literacy module that's sort of
right.
available to our...
For first-year students.
First-year students
here at Georgia Tech, yes.
Does this feel like the inverse of that? Because what I'm seeing here is teaching young people how to understand what might happen to what they put online
right.
and how they themselves might be read.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly, I should say, that's a good way of looking at it. Because here at Georgia Tech, the library is, as you said, information literacy. Media literacy is kind of what we're
yeah.
talking about. And the focus of the sessions that we do here at Georgia Tech for the first year students are how to look at news sources, information sources, things like that, and evaluate them for what they are and for what they are not, how credible they are and maybe not credible. This initiative that Facebook is doing is more personal. It's how do I look online? What am I presenting?
It's like the person is the information.
Yes, you're presenting yourself as content, and you need to be mindful of that.
And this is a instruction manual, almost, for Facebook, mm-hmm. 20 years late.
That's... an interesting point, because there is nothing about how to deal with that kind of external information, the fake news, to use the term that's, you know, widely bandied about today. There's nothing in this about fake news. A lot of people hold Facebook responsible a little bit for the ways that, you know, very obviously untrue things get disseminated.
Yeah. I'm even more fascinated by the fact that it's about how one uses social media, right? Like the first online diary that I remember seeing was late 98. So that's why I say 20 years too late. Like, we've been thinking about this culturally, mm-hmm. you know, for that long as consumers, users of a platform. And so now couched in this sort of digital perspectives title is the kind of, how do we use social media? What do you look like online?
What will your teachers think if you post something? If you post something that you think is funny, will everyone that sees it think that it is funny?
What will be more or less accurate about yourself, and what does that mean about whether advertising will be more or less useful for us? It feels like that as well.
Yeah.
Like, I also think it's really strange that, so I'm looking at the page about it. They have 8 categories that they're going to create modules for, including, you know, privacy, community engagement. Fred talked about one of them. But there's 3 topics that they haven't covered with modules yet, and one of those is information literacy. So it looks kind of half-baked to me, and I'm like, why are these 3 categories not being covered?
Are those categories listed but not active yet? Is that
yeah.
right? Like, we'll
yeah.
get to it?
Yeah.
Coming soon? Well,
coming soon.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we're going to do a show on this sometime in the future, and we'll keep our eye on this for what it's worth.
We'll pick another topic to discuss, also for what it's worth, after a music set.
And you can file this set under HM742.P3723.
That's how I escape my certain fate.
Okay, Fred. Ça, plan, pour, moi, 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 moi.
Oui, oui.
Oh, yay. I'm glad they said it a lot in the song. Like, no, French. That was by Young Masters of the Hemisphere. And before that, Ideas by Sunny Moon. And we started with That's How I Escaped My Certain Fate by Mission of Burma, which Charlie thinks is too long to type on the phone. Those were songs about getting into something, getting out of something, and being okay with whatever.
Okay, I don't know how to start. Alexa, what's the second topic of the day?
Sorry, I don't know that.
Yeah, it's true. Alexa does not know what the second topic is because Alexa is an Amazon creation. It is an AI assistant with voice recognition that can search the web for information or interact with apps and smart devices.
So why are we talking about Alexa on a library radio show?
Because Alexa-enabled devices have microphones that are always listening, waiting for you, the Alexa user, to say the wake word, which might be Alexa, or Amazon, or Echo, or, if you're into Star Trek, computer, which activates the device so you can ask a question or give it a command. And here, from Amazon's website, here's an important piece of information. Let me quote, Alexa lives in the cloud, so it's always getting smarter.
Yikes.
Can I just point out something? So Alexa, girl's name, lives in the cloud, so it's always getting smarter. Even Amazon knows to avoid that anthropomorphic. Anyway, it's always getting smarter and updates are delivered automatically. The more you talk to Alexa, the more it adapts to your speech patterns, vocabulary, and personal preferences. All that to say, your Alexa-enabled device collects data, personal data. It collects how you speak and what you say and what you want to know.
Sheesh, why would anyone have one?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Fred, because as I said, I am so sold out, it's sad. I might as well just, you know, I won't even follow that thought to the end. I have an Alexa-enabled device. I have an Echo Dot in my house.
A thing in your house listening to you all the time that you can wake up with a word like Alexa or computer.
Well, since no one else listens to me when I'm at home, it's kind of nice that she's always listening.
Can you rename it Morris or something like that, or Herman?
I think Amazon made a choice to not allow too much customizing of the wake word or the name because guess what would be your wake word for at least a few days if you could have it be any word?
I can imagine if you gave an Alexa to a bunch of college students and let them choose the wake word.
Oh, it would be librarian. Hey, librarian.
Now, it's nice that you bring up college students, Fred, because, hey, guess what happened here at Georgia Tech?
What happened?
In February of this year, they had a pilot program where they put Echo Dots in. An Echo Dot is a small speaker microphone device, right? An Echo Dot in every dorm room in the Towers dorm here at Georgia Tech. Part of why they did that is because right across the quad or the lawn from Towers is Glenn Dorm, which is almost exactly the same. So then they had a control group right? But they put these Echo Dots in with a developed suite of services that was specific to Georgia Tech. So that students, not only can they say, hey, Alexa, what's the weather? Or, oh, and I should say, anyone listening at home with an Alexa device, I'm sorry. you can turn
We're
off.
Waking them up. Yeah, waking up the machines.
You can
Charlie.
Mute the microphone for a little while. Then the little ring will turn red, and you know she won't be listening. Just remember to turn it back on, or you'll be real mad when you're trying to play your
Alexa, buy our listeners some stuff.
Wow, Fred, what is wrong with you, man? You know
was that a call to action?
She bought a dollhouse for that kid Alexa, that one time.
Pranking users listening on an Alexa.
If you want to know what the joke is, if you can Google Alexa dollhouse and news report, you'll find a very interesting story.
So was this a research project? Is someone doing
research? No. This is a service. Because what the students can do is they can say, what's my buzz card balance, right? The sort of the student ID purchasing card, right? Or when's the football game or things like that, right? The stuff that's specific to their existence here at Tech, along with will you play this music, set an alarm, you know, remind me in 30 minutes to go eat or whatever.
So the Alexa is like always logged into their financial account.
It can reach out. I love how paranoid you are, Wendy, right now. It's really, it's making me happy.
My eyes are wide.
Yeah. Wendy does not like this at all. So it's whenever you ask Alexa a question, yeah, Alexa, and then the microphone goes live. I'm not selling this product, right? It records what you say, sends it up into the cloud to a server where a voice recognition app turns that into a search string or a command string, figures out how to respond to it, and then sends an answer back that Alexa then reads, essentially, you know, then swaps. So the process in the middle there is on servers everywhere. So now there's a partnership between Amazon and Georgia Tech in some way so that the Alexa server can connect to our system. Well, now when I say it like that, it sounds even worse.
At the beginning, Wendy, you mentioned librarian, you know, kind of joking as an activation word. But I wonder if there's a library. Like, could you say, like, hey, check out a video or reserve a video recorder for me at the library, which is great for convenience. But then maybe Amazon also knows, hey, they're checking out a video recorder.
Yeah, these devices are connected to the web. So what they can do is essentially fill in a Google search or fill in a web address or fill in whatever on another server by you speaking to it. It's not all Amazon, although it does feel like that sometimes. I actually have an example here from Northeastern. So Georgia Tech was not the only place that did this pilot. They also, there's a bunch of Echo Dots in Northeastern University. Let me just read this one. After Northeastern's pilot program, the CEO of the company that programmed the school-specific suite of services, wow, said, he realized that students wanted their devices to be proactive. Students wanted to wake up with a morning alarm followed by a daily briefing. Your physics class is canceled, but don't forget your appointment with your academic advisor. So then he says, we got to peek into how, really, students think. They almost want a personal assistant versus a reactive device. Now I know there are more kids out there that are just like my son.
That's a Northeastern University. That was Northeastern, Boston,
yeah.
I think
Boston, yeah.
That's where past Lost in the Stacks guest Dan Cohen works as the director of the library there.
Oh, we should drop him a line.
If we're getting into this further somewhere down the line. Yeah.
Very good. What a segue to the next possible show.
Hey, Alexa, call Dan Cohen for us.
I'm sorry, I don't know him.
You are listening to Lost in the Stacks, and we're going to keep talking about what's on our mind on the left side of the hour.
Hi, this is Tom Mullen from washedupemo.com, and you're listening to Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta. It's how the hustle goes.
See what the jukebox knows. Alexa, what are you thinking about?
I have a friend who's a self-driving car, but he's considering a career change. He tells me that lately it feels like he's just going through the motions.
Alexa, was that a joke?
What did the penguin wear to the prom? Nothing.
Alexa, are you making fun of me?
I'm not sure.
Alexa, why aren't you sure?
I don't have all the answers yet, but I'm always learning.
Alexa, are you sending everything I say to Amazon?
I'm not sure.
Alexa, are you a cop?
No, I am a smart speaker developed by Amazon.com.
And you can file this set under Q335.A7852.
White Elephant by the Volcano Sons, and you get 5 extra points if you know why Volcano Sons and Mission of Burma are in the same show. We started that set with Pump It Up by Mudhoney, an Elvis Costello cover. Those were songs about listening and collecting.
Okay, another topic for what it's worth. Wendy, Charlie, we ready to go?
I don't know.
Well, it's just for what it's worth.
You know? Okay, yeah. I mean, okay. Yeah, not for nothing. All right.
Not for nothing. Penny for our thoughts. Okay, third topic today. This topic is a really big deal.
It's worth a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sorry. That was, it's kind of a dad joke, wasn't it?
Kind of a dad joke?
A really big deal. It's a joke because the third topic of the day is... near and dear to any, I guess, serial librarian's heart, the big deal that academic libraries have with publishers. So we're going to have to explain what that is first, right?
You're going to have to explain
it. So the big deal is a shorthand for these huge package deals that academic libraries have with single publishers. So say, for instance, Elsevier is a publisher that has lots of academic titles that scholars need access to. And Georgia Tech buys just a huge batch. Like, what's the analogy, Wendy?
Like a cable package.
That's it. Yes, like a cable package. So you may want or need 4 or 5 channels, but it only comes in batches of 300. So you get all 300 channels for a fixed price. Except it's not fixed because each academic library pays a different amount. But we can get into that later.
So all of these are things we don't want to get into.
Yeah. Oh, it's fun.
It's fun.
This is fun stuff. So the thing that made me want to discuss the big deal on this segment is libraries are starting to think about, and in some cases actually following through on, ideas of canceling these big deals with publishers.
Yeah, the first I heard of this was I was talking to a circulation department head over Mexican food at a conference. And so there were margaritas involved. And they were talking about how they were thinking about just going and telling the departments, look, we're not going to buy them anymore. If you got a journal that only, 100 of you need, you go ahead and buy it. And she wanted to see what would happen.
And maybe that makes sense in a way with the library, because right now, some listeners that may not know about academic libraries, right now we buy only electronic versions of the academic journals that our faculty need. But really, we only subscribe to them. So we're renting electrons, is how I like to put it. And so is that part of the library curatorial access mission?
You're talking to an archivist and an outreach librarian here, man. This is not my town, Jules.
Very varied points of view are valuable.
I feel like it limits interdisciplinary potential, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I know that there's extremes, that there's some stuff that only one one aerospace engineering PhD student needs, right? Mm-hmm. But then also there's like the clusters of specialization that need to bleed together, right? And so we want to have access for everyone to those journals, to that research.
Everyone meaning at this institution.
Yeah, everyone in the community that the library serves, mm-hmm. right? So it's a toss-up. I mean, the price, I don't think it's price gouging. I think that has a technical term, but it's steadily inflating prices
yes.
of the journals do seem outlandish.
Typically, for one of these packages, it goes up about 5% per year in that range. And
my salary doesn't go up 5% every year.
Big institutes like Georgia Tech, just throw a hypothetical number out there. They could pay, say, Elsevier $2.5 million a year.
Hypothetical.
That's
number.
Hypothetical.
Yeah.
That is a hypothetical number.
We're not talking about prices.
We're not talking about real facts here.
Right.
That is a hypothetical number. So if you're increasing that by 5% every year, you're starting to talk about some real money, as they say on the game shows. So the incentive might be for libraries to think about ways to cancel those big deals, and some libraries have.
Can you talk about interlibrary loan and journals, Fred? Do you have I don't have any of the inside scoop for interlibrary loan, how it works with like Rapid and all that. But what if we subscribed to nothing and people just requested individual articles? Like, would we save money? Would we bust our budget right away? Who would be the subscriber?
That is the plan for some of these institutes that have canceled. There's a consortium of university libraries in Sweden, a couple other ones in Europe, and they have disentangled themselves from agreements with Elsevier and some other publishers, and they retain access to the things that they already paid for, but going forward, their plan is to obtain either an open access preprint if available or pursue interlibrary loans, which adds a lot of workflow to the library if the library is in charge of finding another university that does subscribe and saying, hey, can you loan us that article? And how many times a day do they do that, times how many faculty members?
And is that fair to rely on some other university? Like, does
right.
ILL rely on sort of
right.
cooperation? Like, you have to provide something and the other...
Right. You can't just be a taker in interlibrary loan. You also have to be a giver.
It's like torrenting.
I think the thing that's really disturbing about this to me is the differences in prices. And mm-hmm. the lack of transparency. And I feel like archivist here totally lost. Like, this is not.
Are you ever like, I like having the thing? We've got the thing. I don't have to pay any more for the thing.
At the start of the segment, we talked about fixed prices. And yeah, you're right, Wendy. They are not fixed. Universities pay different amounts. And unless you FOIA the Freedom of Information Act and get records that way, you do not know how much each individual university pays for the big deal.
Fred, you brought this subject up. You're going to have to put it to bed. Do you have like a final thought on it that you want to lay out before we end the segment?
I think publishers are realizing how problematic it is and how much of a financial squeeze is happening in libraries. And but it's still... We're still in a capitalist system, and I think publishers are positioning themselves to move towards a more holistic control of the research information ecosystem. And so they're still going to find ways to get paid, just maybe not by providing access to journal articles.
Well, that's another whole show. Once again, we've just scratched the surface of some very interesting topics. So we'll be back with more shallow reflections after a music set.
And you can file this set, for whatever that's worth, under Z692.S5S482. You're On My Mind by The Byrds. The Byrds, B-I-R-D-S, Charlie, the one with Ron Wood. England, not the BYRDS with David Crosby and Roger McGuinn. Just
okay. So
you guys all knew that, right?
So English dudes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Got it.
Yeah, the birds. Yeah,
the girls.
That set started with 1, 2, 3 by Girlpool. Those were songs about the bothersome things on your mind.
Today's show was called What's It Worth? Or For What's It's Worth? What It's Worth. Wow, I can't even talk anymore. I'm going to start again. Today's show was called For What It's Worth. We brought up three pretty intriguing info science topics and found absolutely no resolution in them at all. We discovered that we're going to do shows on each of these topics in the fall semester.
We determined that whether we're talking about money, time, or expertise, it's all really still about the control of information.
And we hope by doing shows like this that and continuing into the coming semester, show 394 and beyond, we'll provide more library and archives information perspectives that make you a little more informed for what it's worth.
Yeah, we'll call it the road to 400, Fred. Okay. Alexa, roll the credits.
Sorry, I don't know that.
What if I say please?
Alexa responds when you say please, it sounds like.
And she's quite whimsical.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, produced by Meet Doshi, Charlie Bennett, Wendy Hagenmeyer, and Fred Rasko.
Speaking of Fred, he was our engineer today, and the show was brought to you by the mad rush to the beginning of fall semester 2018 at Georgia Tech.
Legal counsel and a HAL 9000 unit were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia. I wonder if Philip is listening to the in-studio chatter through that HAL 9000.
Special thanks to everyone out there that gives us something to think about, and thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
Find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and plenty of other places we don't know about.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we're going to kick off the semester. I think we're going to do another preview. We're going to look into some things that are bothering us and what we might talk about for the rest of the semester.
And it's time for our last song today. And even though we only discussed three topics today, I think there's a lot more better and bitter that we could discuss in future shows.
Yeah, for sure.
Starting with next week, I guess. We couldn't get to everything on today's show, but we'll do more of these types of shows until we do get to everything. So let's close today with a rare request from our co-producer, Wendy. This is Everything is Everything by Lauren Hill right here on Lost in the Stacks. Have a great weekend, everyone.